Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
This is Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick. I do hope you're well. Thanks for tuning in once again for our regular weekly mental health discussion. Got some exclusive news on the way in a few moments' time, and I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation. We're going to have courtesy of the University of Liverpool, who got in contact with the station with a new project that's being worked on associated with professional football. We've got a couple of guests in the studio. We're going to meet them in just a few moments' time. Thanks to everybody who's been emailing the show this week. Got some news for you as well. Me and producer Lizzie found out this week that we've been nominated for an award for campaigning journalism. Mental Health Monday has been nominated in the campaigning journalism category of the IRN Awards, which are independent commercial radio news awards. So we've been nominated for that. So if you've been part of the programme, you supported the programme, you're part of that too. Thank you for your support. And I think we've got to do to go to in London at the end of March. We'll see how we do. But just to be nominated is very nice, says somebody who might not win. And if we don't, then it's absolutely fine. If we do, that will be great too. But the IRN Awards due at the end of March. It's Mental Health Monday then, for a Monday. Let's meet our guests in the studio. We've got Andrew Bethel and also Dr. Ross White. Guys, thank you for your time. Great to see you both.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for agreeing to be on our Facebook Live video feed as well.
No, sir.
Often when people come on the radio, they go, oh, if you'd have said I was on TV as well, but it's not quite the same. This is going to be something which I think is going to get quite a lot of traction, because it's something which has kind of been hinted at within the mainstream media, but something which we've talked about a lot on this programme, about sports people, professional athletes, professional footballers, and associated mental health problems. And you guys in the University of Liverpool and On The Head want to get to grips with this. Andrew, just where's the starting point, if you like, for this study?
So I've got a real keen interest in mental health in football. So I'm actually a trainee clinical psychologist at the University of Liverpool. And as part of the training programme, the doctoral training programme, we are required to write a doctoral level thesis. And that can be on any topic that you like. So Ross and I bumped heads for a good few weeks, bouncing some ideas around, and both had a very, very keen interest in mental health and football. So it took a little while kind of talking about what ideas we had and how we could roll this out. And On The Head was born through that, really.
So in terms of your preconceptions, I guess, you know, scientifically, you're not really allowed to have any, but you must have researched where the studies and research has got so far.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're setting up a research project, we'll always kind of look at the scientific literature and what's out there anyway. So much of the research that's been done has looked at either performance in professional sport or looked at prevalence of mental health difficulties or well-being. There's been very, very little work looking actually at the psychological predictors of mental health or well-being, and that's where we come in.
Ross, how quickly did you think, right, there's something here, there's a reason to study this as well, and there's value in studying this?
Yeah. So in my previous post at the University of Glasgow, I was supervising a PhD student called Stephen Leckie, and he's doing his PhD into mental toughness in elite level rugby players. And in learning about performance psychology and what it is that helps people perform, as a clinical psychologist, the lens that I was bringing to that was about, well, how might people's mental health and well-being impact on their performance in games? So there is no health without mental health. And people put great emphasis on nutrition, about physical rehab after injury, but there's not been sufficient emphasis placed really on the importance of mental health for performance. And in learning about that, I started to realise about the high prevalence of mental health difficulties in elite level athletes, and Andy's interest in professional football specifically has brought us together, and I'm very proud to be involved in this project.
When we talk, and we'll get into sort of the specifics around football, because of course football is seen as the number one sport in the UK, but in terms of the work that you've already seen, the type of research that you've looked into across different sports, are you expecting to see things which will be transferable, that if you learn lessons from football, that is something you might be able to take into rugby union, rugby league, different sports right around the country?
Absolutely. I think what we have noticed really are different pressures at different points in the athlete's journey in their career. So that phase in late adolescence, whenever they're maybe transitioning from an academy into a professional contract, can present difficulties because not everybody might necessarily get offered that contract. So that can be a cause for major upheaval, major stress, people being shunted off a trajectory that they had for their future. During their actual career in that sort of phase, there's pressures around how they deal with disappointment, how they deal with injury setback, and people can get into what are generally avoidant ways of coping with those difficulties. So one way to avoid the distress is to engage in behaviours that momentarily alleviate that distress. So it could be about the use of substances potentially, it could be about gambling, so those momentary highs to offset some of the disappointments that people might be facing. And then in the final phase, you see this transitioning out of sport, where people have really attached their identity to the athletic identity that they've been developing through their life. And how is that whenever they might transition out of sport? So that's applicable for rugby, that's applicable for cricket, that's applicable for football. So I think absolutely there are understandings that can be shared across those different sports.
So this is where it gets more complicated, doesn't it? Because do you judge this as you are an individual who is a footballer, therefore your mental health is designed to help you be a footballer? Or do you look at it as in you are a human being? It's about the fact that everyone's got mental health. And if you've got positive mental health, then the chances are that's going to help you in your career, whatever it is. And if that means football, then that's great. You know, there's the performance enhancement side of things and there's the just getting by kind of things, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly right. I think that first and foremost, footballers are human beings and face the same life stresses and pressures as all of us, you know. What's different, I suppose, about the life of a footballer is that you're in the public eye. You know, you're performing your craft in front of thousands of people on a weekly basis, and the pressures that that bring are very, very intense. But of course, these guys are humans first and foremost, and like I said, they will really have the same pressures and daily stresses that we all do.
In terms of those everyday pressures and how they relate, the footballers, relate to our everyday lives, there was a study in 2015, it was a FIFPro study, right? You probably know them off the top of your head by now, but what did it find?
So FIFPro are a really fantastic organisation doing really, really good work, and they've done some great research looking at mental health in professional football. So the study you're referring to in 2015... found that 38% of current players and 35% of ex-professional players reported symptoms of common mental disorders. So they're symptoms of things like depression, anxiety, sleeping problems, gambling, maybe adverse substance use. And they also found as well that a history of injury during the game really increased somebody's risk of developing mental health difficulties. So some really, really interesting findings.
So that will be higher than a national average for people who aren't professional footballers.
Yes. Yeah.
So straight away, you've got factors in play there, which tell you that there's a special case, if you like, for footballers, yeah, a special reason to look into it.
Absolutely. So the Mental Health Foundation in the UK do some great work in promoting awareness around mental health and well-being. So statistics that they have quoted from the Psychiatric Morbidity Survey from 2014 indicate that 1 in 6 people in the UK will be suffering from a common mental disorder at the current time. So the figures that Andy is quoting are markedly higher than
Double. So 1 in 6 becomes more than 1 in 3. Mm-hmm. And if you consider straight away that there are 11 lads on a football field, and you're going to look at the women's game as well, I understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got, you know, two sides, 22 people on a football pitch. Suddenly you're looking at, it's not just one or two. There are going to be significant numbers on the players at any one time who have got mental health issues.
Yeah, I think it's important to state that, you know, the study said that this really high percentage of people were suffering with common symptoms of mental disorders, not necessarily diagnosed with mental health problems. And that's really interesting in itself because it lends really nicely to the work we're doing, which is looking not specifically at mental health disorders, but also looking at psychological well-being.
Who do you want to speak to then? Who's going to really give you an insight then? How is this study going to work in terms of communication with pros, former pros and people involved in the game?
Yeah, so at the moment we're building up links with as many stakeholders in the game as we can. You know, we've got some really, really good partnerships with an organisation called LAPS, which is Life After Professional Sport, and that's run by a chap called Robbie Simpson, who is a player for Exeter. And we've also got really good links with an organisation called X-Pro, which are looking after the interests of players once they retire. So at the moment, we're really trying to build up links with stakeholders in the game that can really help us promote the research and encourage players to take part.
I think it's important to add that the study's only going to be as good as the breadth of the sample that we can recruit. So partnership with stakeholders and trying to get that breadth of people signing up and committing to taking part in the research is really important.
I mean, sometimes and there's always a stigma when we talk about mental health, and there's a danger people might go, oh, you're trying to put a stigma upon our players. You're going to, you know, question their mental fitness as well. I guess you guys are saying, well, this is out there in society. Let's get a real handle of it. Let's allow you as football clubs and football associations, presumably, to get a handle on it so we know how we can best help young people for the future.
Well, I think it's great credit to players like Chris Kirkland, former players who have come out and spoken about their lived experience of these difficulties. And there's a risk that we collude in this collective delusion that I have to be okay because everybody else seems to be okay. And often that's not the case. And people being brave and courageous in the way that they are, and the work that Jeff Scott and others are doing at X-Pro to help support the needs of people who are prepared to come forward. This is an unseen battle. That's how Ruth Fox, who plays for Cambridge United Women's Club, has referred to this in the book that she's just published. So we're keen that because people are coming forward and talking about this, it's addressing the need that is there and that we can't pretend it's not there.
Are you expecting players to come forward individually to almost volunteer their thoughts and their experiences?
Yeah. So we've developed a website which is live from today, and that's onthehead.org. And we're hoping that players will come to the website and take part on our online questionnaire. So the survey takes about 15 to 20 minutes to complete, and we're asking players to fill in, to answer some questions about their sports career, so their football career, and answer some questions about their mental health and well-being and life satisfaction.
And in terms of then your communication with them, will that be anonymous? Do they have to give details of their club and where they're at?
No, not at all. So we don't ask for any identifiable information at all. So taking part is completely confidential. And we do ask players to let us know what league they're playing in at the moment. So we're interested in kind of where players are currently playing in regards to what league they're at, but we don't ask any information about clubs at all.
And we talk about, you know, stakeholders within the game. That's a phrase for people who have got, you know, reasons to be involved in the game. Yeah. You mentioned Chris Kirkland. You know, they just recently I've been reading stories about Neil Lennon and Kieran Dyer, who was in the news just last week. We talked many times on this programme with Clark Carlisle. People will know the issues that Aaron Lennon was living with as well. We know that players of a certain age seem to be quite willing to talk about the fact that they've had experiences. Do you think it's going to be a little bit different when you've got maybe younger guys, 21, 22, the bravado that comes with that, the dressing room sort of like machismo that comes with that, that might make things a little bit more difficult in terms of then thinking, well, it's not something that I need to worry about now. It's not something that I'm going to consider, because I presume to you guys, it will be helpful to have people on board who feel like they've got positive mental health, that who feel like they don't have any issues.
Yeah. I can't speak for the people that you've identified there, but I think there would be a commonality across those individuals in what they say about the fact that in the past there's been a lack of willingness to acknowledge that these are difficulties that need to be addressed, that people have been reluctant in the past to potentially speak about it. So the fact that people are now coming forward and expressing that willingness, I think will be important moving forward, so that people are having these discussions and identifying the need for support to be made available. And I'll emphasise again, Andy highlighted this earlier, that the intention of this research is to identify predictors of mental health and well-being. Well-being. Now, that is an aspiration that all of us could sign up to. And I think it's important for us to emphasise that the purpose of this research is to inform forms of support that can help promote mental health and well-being within the professional game and within the academy systems.
We've got Dr. Ross White and Andrew Bettle in the studio. Can we talk? I mean, the issue around mental health within footballers, the sort of the ignorant response is footballers get paid a load of money. What have they got to worry about? We know, though, through various different testimonies from players of different walks of life coming forward, that they are individuals, they are human beings, and they have issues in the same way that everybody else has issues. Dr. Ross, How do you think that this is going to stack up when you start looking into the details of this one? Because there are factors within the life of a footballer mm-hmm. related to travelling away from home, downtime, availability of cash, cultures that exist within football clubs, movements around the country as well, which aren't relatable to our own lives. Mm-hmm. So how do you think that you can sort of square as many circles as you can to get a full understanding of the lifestyle of mm-hmm. a footballer and how their mental health is either affected by that or improved by that?
Mm-hmm. I think it's great that you've highlighted some of those key factors that are specific, if you like, to sport and professional football in this case, that can impact on people's mental health and well-being. So things like injuries, transitions, moving clubs, not necessarily getting professional contracts if you're in the academy system. You also highlighted, importantly, the public's misconceptions perhaps around, well, footballers earn a stack of money, how can they be unhappy? But we know that money can't buy you happiness. And it doesn't excuse us as communities who can potentially support each other from that duty of care that might exist for making sure that people have the support available to them that's going to be helpful. So I think we need to appreciate that there's a pyramid. And at this apex of this pyramid, you have a small, relatively small number of professionals who are earning extraordinary amounts of money. But the vast majority of the rest of that pyramid are people who potentially play lower down the leagues, who don't necessarily have access to the same kinds of financial resource that those top, top professionals have. And of course, whenever they're playing, that money might be available to them. But when they transition out of sport, that adjustment can be huge. So it's not just about the transition in identity, but it's also about transition in weekly pay, for example, and how people fare in the aftermath of that. So there's a great book called Retired by Alan Gernon, who's an Irish comedian who has done his research and worked with Jeff Scott at X-Pro to look at the types of difficulty that can emerge in the aftermath of people's playing career.
I guess as football fans, we sometimes do that thing at the end of the season where they go, look down the leagues, here are all the players who've been released or are available on a free contract, and we try and work out a decent 11 from, you know, where we go, oh, well, those players. And actually what we don't consider it, those are people who previously had employment, contract and income, mm-hmm. to those people who no longer had employment, contracts and income, who suddenly fall off a cliff, potentially financially, as to where they're going to go next. And it's as fans, we don't view the game with players' mental health in mind at all, do we, really?
No, and that's the thing. It is really difficult because, like you say, when people are released at the end of a season, they are unemployed, you know. And there was a study actually that came out that got a lot of press on the BBC recently that was run by the Professional Players Association. And this wasn't with footballers specifically, this was with a wide range of sports people. And they found that half of the former sports people that they had interviewed were concerned about their mental health and well-being since retirement. And one in two of those people felt that they were not in control of their lives. So it's really interesting, and that really highlights, I suppose, the difficulties that players face as soon as they leave the game. You know, where do they go? As Ross said earlier, people have developed this athletic identity that they've held on very strongly to for their sporting career. And then all of a sudden, when they can't play sport, people report feeling quite lost, frustrated, distressed. And I think that's the point really where organisations such as X-Pro, LAPS are really key.
Can we talk about the women's game, which has kind of really emerged in the last sort of 5 to 6 years, but has had a steady period of growth in the last 10 or 15 years? In terms of how the women's game is viewed, are you expecting to see different results to the men? Because although women are obviously, they still have the same sort of issues, their pay will be significantly less. The travel and the distances might still be exactly the same, though. But also clubs are looking and starting many of their infrastructures from the women's game and with a much more sort of modern common sense to it, rather than just this is the way we've always done things within the men's game. Are you expecting to see a difference between men and women? I know you're not allowed to say you're expecting to see differences because it spoils your results, but what would you expect to see? Yeah,
I think that's precisely the reason why we're spreading that net wide, and it's clear that so many young women and women are passionate about developing their sporting career, particularly in football these days. And it's great to have Susan Wood as a collaborator on this project. And Susan is a clinical psychologist who has done a qualitative research study looking into the mental health and well-being of professional footballers. So we're keen to build on the work that she did with this qualitative study, which is basically asking people to provide a narrative to how their experience is in professional football. So it identifies themes from what they say that we can then build on in terms of the choice of measures that we have used in the current study to develop an understanding around people's levels of mental health and well-being, but importantly what the predictors are of that. So yeah, very excited to see what that shows up in the women's game. And again, I'll refer back to Ruth Fox at Cambridge United Women's Club and the book that she's written. She has aspirations to play in the Women's Soccer League over in the United States. So clearly it's a bit more established there in terms of the professional setup and the frameworks available and potentially the financial rewards. So yeah, we're very interested to see whether there's potential differences across the groups.
Andrew, in terms of the results, you obviously don't know what the results are going to be, but what are you hoping that the results will show? What will be the value in finding the results of this study?
I think firstly, what we're really hoping is we can get as many players to take part as possible. As Ross said earlier, people with lived experience of mental health difficulties and people without, just so we can get a really good representative sample. I think it's going to be interesting for us to compare our results to studies that have been undertaken already. So for example, that FIFA Pro study in 2015 that we spoke about earlier, be interesting to compare our prevalence rates with their prevalence rates. But also I think what's important in our research and what's taking it to the next step is we're actually looking to identify psychological predictors of mental health difficulties and of psychological well-being. So hopefully the measures that we're using will help us then to develop and inform better support and interventions for players right across their playing career, from academy players to when people are actually in their playing career, then to when people transition out and retire.
Is this the value then that clubs will see in this one? Because if you speak to any professional, you know, sporting establishment, it comes down to money. There is value contained within that, in that if those red flags emerge or can be spotted, that is something which clubs can then enact on, which then protects an asset, which unfortunately is how a lot of football clubs view their players. They're an asset who they need to have firing 100% in both physical and mental health to get best value from. Are those red flag indicators then the value for those clubs, the reason for them to get involved?
That, Mick, that's a great point. I think in terms of the way services and forms of support have been set up to date is that unfortunately it's been reactive. Bad things have had to happen before necessarily people have had the support made available to them. And as I said, no health without mental health. Having this focus within clubs, within professional football association, within the players' associations, if you have the opportunity to enhance mental health and well-being throughout that journey, the argument is that you're going to get a lot more satisfied and happy professional athletes who can produce for their clubs, and that investment can actually ensure that things go well, not just for individuals, not just for teams, but for the clubs themselves more broadly. So I think it's a really important point, this idea about being proactive rather than reactive.
Are you aware of any club or sporting institution around the world that when it carries out a medical, we all know about medicals and metatarsals and everything like that now, is there any institution that you're aware of that carries out a sort of a mental health assessment of a footballer? Because actually when you think about it, of course it's important physically what you like as well, but it's not something that we particularly are aware of from a mental health point of view.
Mm-hmm. I think in terms of mental health assessment within those medicals, to my understanding, that's not there. That's not something that is a major part of those checks. Now, I could stand corrected on that, but it is important potentially for professionals like clinical psychologists, like counselling psychologists potentially, to have a role So not just sports psychologists or performance psychologists, but clinical psychologists who can perhaps advise clubs on ways to support mental health and wellbeing of their players.
People want to find out more information, the website onthehead.org. That's onthehead.org. You can check that out today, Monday. Or Tuesday, whatever day is convenient to you, whenever you listen to this on the podcast. How quickly do you want to get the information turned round? How long are you looking at the study to run for?
So I envisage the study to be running for about 18 months in its initial stage. So hopefully within 18 months, we should have some results that we'll be able to release. But we're hoping that our work will continue beyond that for sure.
Well, what we'll do as well, we'll make sure when we get out the podcast, we'll make sure that we tag in as many people that have joined us on the programme as well. We've also got contacts within the PFA as well, who would be sort of a great organisation to get on board as well. So I'll tag those in and try and get them and make sure that they're aware of onthehead.org. Gents, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Hello again to the Clinical Psychology Year 2 lot at the University of Liverpool as well. Watch it on our Facebook live feed. I'll mention the website one more time, onthehead.org. And our special guests in the studio today, Andrew Bethel and Dr. Ross White.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.